So I know this is Father's Day, and I just want to first wish the fathers here or anybody to whom this applies a happy Father's Day. But my talk first occurred to me, and it's a talk that I'm giving really for more advanced practitioners, which you all seem to be. The talk first occurred to me on April Fool's Day, not on Father's Day. And I was reflecting that really, for a Buddhist, every day is April Fool's Day because we live in a constant state of being fooled, really. Buddhists call it delusion or ignorance, avidya, right? But unlike the jovial sense of the April Fool's joking, this is serious business to Buddhists because delusion is the most fundamental basis of our unhappiness. And this is because, as I'm sure you know, our misinterpretation of the reality of our lives results in an ongoing search for happiness that we will never find. Not because it isn't there for us, but because we're deluded about where to find it. So tonight, what I wanted to do is explore with you more about this delusion and how we break through the fog of being fooled. Okay? You with me? So, what's the delusion? It's about where to find happiness, right? And most folks think in the world, if you ask your neighbors, that happiness is to be found in reaching our dreams, okay? In getting all that we want and avoiding life's pitfalls, all that we don't want. And I'm not talking about just the crasser desires that people have of the cool car or the dream house or even the good paying satisfying job. It's the degree, the relationship, the recognition. It's getting skilled at pickleball or rock climbing or having interesting vacations, the body you wanted, and a lot of good friends. And I could go on. It's even about becoming a proficient meditator, right? And I like those things too, right? But if you believe that this is where happiness is located, think about where this leaves your consciousness. You're kind of in what I want, how to get it, with all the thoughts and plans and strategizing that go with that. And what I think about myself also because I am or I'm not on track to achieve these things. My consciousness lives in control mode, vigilantly trying to assure that all the ducks are in order so that the circumstances of my life support my preferences, what I want to happen and what I don't want to happen. And I'm often in the future a lot, right? And in this culture, it's really what we teach our children or our grandchildren, okay? This is more of a grandchildren group, I think, right? Like I am. What do you want to be, to become, to achieve? We tell young people to find their passion, to follow their dreams. We cheer children on as they compete at ages younger than in almost any culture in the world. And then in the best-selling video games, they become the heroes, off pursuing an epic quest or a lofty victory, usually with weapons in hand. And it's not that there's no good or joy in this, right? But it's misleading about what brings true happiness. And I don't know if you read my bio. It's why I'm talking this way, because it's my first time teaching here. But I've been a cultural anthropologist in my career, throughout my whole life. And so I'm very attuned to the ways of culture and often how those unexamined ways bend our minds, those of ourselves and of our children. And so while our kids are out defeating enemies and winning the day in their video games or their sports during the weekend, this, I'm going to share a screen for a minute, is what Tibetan kids are doing on the weekends. See if I can. Can you see that?
I think you need to double click on the one. Is it the monk's dance, children?
It's the monk's dance. Are you seeing a picture of monks dancing?
We have a whole collection of pictures.
Yeah, we're seeing your drive. You need to click on one of them to open it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
how's that? Cool. Okay.
No.
Well,
so
you need
so
to open
watch.
It.
I mean, this is what kids are watching. The kind of a monk's dance. And
Kathy, you need to open it. You need to start it. It's not happening.
It's not. It says you're screen sharing.
Yes, but it's not happening. We're not seeing the monk's dance.
Oh.
There it is.
Oh, there we go.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Okay.
That's one photo.
So, you know, this is what I first witnessed in Nepal. And I thought, you know, there, if you even look at one of the monks, it looks like they have a sword. And I was thinking, you know, why does a monk have a sword? Maybe it's, you know, it seems so violent. It's really not that different from our kids' video games, right? It's really similar. And then a local said to me, oh, no, they're not killing any beings. The monks are slaying delusion. Okay. And you could see all these little children here watching. And let me see if I can. I thought I have done this before. And apparently I'm just not doing it so well this time. I don't know how to. I'm not sure how to get out of this now. Can anybody there who knows? There. Okay. Sorry.
You did it.
Okay. But I wanted to show you one other image just of, let's see whether this, how easily this comes up. Sorry for the tech problem. It's not my forte. What about that? Can you see that?
Yes.
Okay. And, you know, and if you look in the bottom, it's not just little monks, it's all these little children there watching, you know? I was very struck by that. You know, and I thought, maybe it's easier in a culture where recognizing and uprooting delusion is really part of public life in that way, you know, and that's what people do. So, okay. So are we out of it now? Okay. So not surprisingly, our children come to believe what adults believe, that pursuing the objects of our desire seem to make unquestioned sense. And it's confirmed every day on, you know, on Facebook. Here I am on vacation or eating wonderful food or having fun with my devoted friends. And even in my age bracket, I notice how many people talk about bucket lists, the things I have to, I want to have or do before I die. You know, it really is, it's a similar idea. And with all this cultural reinforcement, it's very hard to see that getting what we want and avoiding what we don't, along with spending most of our life energy thinking about this and doing this, will not result in the peace and contentment we seek, right? So I know I'm speaking a little bit to the choir here of people who know this, but the dilemma really is this. How can we see what we can't see? And I suggest that because the Dharma isn't readily seen in our culture or natural to our cultural eye, even as meditators, we have to practice seeing things that are unnatural. So tonight, I offer three counterintuitive things to keep in mind when dealing with our experience. And I'm going to name them, and then I'll go into them a little bit. One is to notice the thorn in the pleasant, the hook in what we want. Okay. The second is to find the doorway to freedom in what we don't want, in dukkha. Right? And the third is to discover the peace, even the bliss, in what is neutral. And I'll go into more of these in the talk. But each practice helps us to see beyond the deluded state of reaching for pleasantness and avoiding unpleasantness as the way to happiness. And I'm going to start with the last point, which is to cultivate the neutral feeling, because it relates to the instructions I gave in our meditation tonight, right? I was influenced by the head of a Zen monastery in the U.S. who suggested that we question the typical focus on the predominant in our meditation. You know, find what's predominant and go to, you know, look at what's predominant. If we always turn to what's predominant in our meditation, he suggests, don't we just practice following the pleasant and the unpleasant, and as we do in life. Right? And so that was the focus for me. So take that a moment now, again, to look inward. Okay. Look at the sensations inside your body. Where does your attention go? Even in a subtle way, does your attention move to something noticeable because it's a little pleasant or a little unpleasant? And if it does, that's kind of the natural way, I think, that our attention moves toward pleasant and unpleasant. Okay, then what else is there? Besides what is grabbing your attention right now, that pleasantness or that little unpleasantness, can you find something happening in your field of consciousness, a sensation maybe, that has neither the push or a pull to it, that neither the pleasantness or the unpleasantness? So see if you can find that. And rest there without comment. Let yourself sink into what you feel there. And what you may find is a sense of blank spaciousness. Perhaps of calm, stillness, peace. I've started to do this in my life practice too, particularly when there's a strong pull of pleasant or unpleasant, and I'm finding it very revealing. For me, a growing appreciation for neutral feelings, right? And also the equanimity, the peace, the stillness, really I would say the quiet happiness that can be found in just resting in things that aren't pulling and aren't pushing. And it's interesting to make a practice of our looking at that our attention doesn't always need to go where we are either pushed or pulled or repelled. And none of this is to suggest that there isn't an important place in our practice for attending to the pleasant and unpleasant, to desires and aversions. But the challenge in doing this is to do it without being fooled when we do so, which is to be drawn into conventional delusions. Pleasant, I pull toward. Unpleasant, I push away. Can we do something different than that? That's the challenge. Right? And my second invitation to you is this, to do the unconventional. When the pleasant occurs and we feel the promise and pull of what we want, is it possible to see the hook there? The danger, really. The Buddhist texts constantly remind us, desire is a rose with a thorn, right? Be careful about what you like, what you prefer, what you want, especially those strong pulls. We all can see this, I think, in the gross forms of desire, like the grasping love that leads to jealousy and kills the relationship, or the blind ambition that can consume a life, the desires that lead to overeating or addiction, or at the societal level, unbridled consumerism, really. But can you see also the more subtle forms? Can you see the hook in the vacation or the relationship that was supposed to do it, even before they're over? Can you see those hooks? Right? And that's really the challenge. And this doesn't mean that we keep that we don't enjoy the pleasant and we keep ruining the party, right? But can we truly enjoy without the ignorance of grasping the pleasant? Because not only is this a prescription for suffering, but it stops our experience short of being able to touch an even greater happiness, right? So it's hard to see these things in the abstract. So here's a really small everyday life incident that came from a student in my meditation class who got this. Right? And she was not a beginning meditator either. And she described going to Sedona in the fall. Do you know, any of you know Sedona? Okay. I see a few head shakes. I'm afraid to share again the screen, but I'm going to try it briefly and see if I can do it. Okay. Let's try. Can you see that or no? No? Okay, I'm forgetting that then. Sedona in the fall is, it's a beautiful red rock area, that, you know, with crimson rocks and blue sky, and it's spectacular looking and unusual looking. And she went there And this is the story she kind of shared with me, entranced by the beauty she saw. And think of a beautiful place in your own life, so I don't have to share that. And just in, and you know, is there, she said, is there just anything more beautiful than this? Oh my God, look at these colors. The sky against the red rocks, the leaves changing colors in the fall. She started taking photos on her phone, there and over there. And look at that, got to get that view. And then, mindfulness, right? She felt the hook. I'm missing the beauty. The tug of greed, trying to make it permanent on my phone, trying to make it mine. She felt the suffering in it. You know, and I thought that was incredible right in the middle of that moment. So she put the phone down, looked at the view, and sent out a wish to share this beauty with all beings. And she said it was at that point that she felt happy and still there with the beauty too. And I thought it was a lovely example, really. We don't cease to enjoy, we cease to attach, because that's where the thorn is, right? And it works this way too with unpleasantness and not wanting in life. If every time I'm bored or restless, I fix it and I return to my Sudoku game, which I do play, you know, or Facebook or TV, what I miss by doing this is the doorway. It's the doorway to insight, really the doorway to freedom. If you turn away from the pleasant and put all your energy into fixing it, you really are stopping short of the doorway, and so you never see the way out. So, again, I want to share a story from my own life. And one of the times I saw this clearly happen was in the wake of my mother's death, which was recent. She was 99. My family members all arrived to help clear out her home before selling it and claim different items. I already have a full house here in Flagstaff, but there was one thing from my mother that I wanted, and it was a hand-blown glass bowl that she loved, and it grew violets in it. And I'm going to try this, because I want you to see this ball, all right? And I think I did it right this time. Is that showing up? Yeah, I'm getting yes. I'm getting some yeses and some nos. Bill says no. Veda Marin Sangha says yes.
I see it beautifully. It's great. What?
You can see it?
Oh, it's beautiful, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I see it too.
Okay. I'm sorry for those of you who can't. I wonder why you can't see it. Those who can't, Veda.
No,
can't
I was confused. I do see it.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. So, as we were picking up these objects to ship, my niece came over to me and said, "Don't pack this. It could get damaged in shipping. Let me bring it to you when I visit in a month." So she texted me in a month from the departing airport, that she was keeping the bowl on her lap the whole trip from the East Coast, where she lived. And we laughed. And the next thing I heard from her was a phone call, and I could barely make out what she was saying because she was hysterical crying. While walking to the baggage claim, She tripped. The bowl fell and shattered. So I'm gonna, and a wave of grief washed over me. And the thoughts, can it be repaired? Did we know the glassblower shop where we could get a duplicate made? You know, all control mode, right? And then probably because I so sense my niece's grief, I just turn toward it, not trying to fix the reality in my mind. And what came is harder to describe in words. Kind of grief feels like this. An open heart, love, compassion, self-compassion, impermanence, right? Release, relief, equanimity. It transformed for me and for my niece, who's a Buddhist practitioner as well, in an unexpected surge of peace and connectedness. And I discovered for myself the Zen saying, right? The glass is always broken. You know that saying? It was so real. It was so true. And the Taiwanese master's word, don't add difficulty to difficulty. By maintaining a mind of peace and non-opposition, the most difficult part of difficulties naturally fall away. And they did, almost instantly, that shift, right? That shift of perspective. And I asked my niece, this I don't need a photos for. I asked my niece if she would bring me a shard, right, from the broken bowl. So I'm reminded of these lessons and the perfect poignant gift of the broken bowl. And it remains a source of insight and really of joy for me when I look at that. Getting what we want and avoiding what we don't as a mode of living reinforces our ignorance and leads us away from real happiness. And every time I look at that shard, that's what I see. Whatever temporary happiness I get from the having or the avoiding is the happiness booby prize, right? Because it stops short. I never will really see where the suffering is coming from. That it's not the broken ball. That's not the suffering. It's my attachment to it, right? And my sense of its permanence and its mindness and its, you know, that's the piece of it that it, where the suffering is. And not seeing this, I would miss the doorway to my own freedom. So, have you found the hook yet? The thorn in the wonderful sit, right? If you attach to it, right? Oh, that time or that retreat or that, you know? Can you bring wisdom to the not wonderful sit? So it's a doorway and not a sad commentary on me as a meditator. This is where our practice grows from, and this is where lasting happiness lives. So, I think those are, that's enough for my remarks today. I thank you for your attention. Yeah. And my apologies for the tech difficulties.
Would you be willing to take some questions or comments as well?
Sure.
Kathy, that was really a great talk. Thank you so much. We really enjoyed that. I'm so glad that you could join us from Flagstaff.
Your
meditation was really interesting in looking at inside the body to
to find, you know, we're initially my attention went to my heart space, but then you said to look for a neutral place, and it went to my knees. It's just like, you know, it's like nothing was going on there, you know.
Yeah.
It was really clever. I never thought about that. So it's really, you know, the talk about going to, you know, the neutral feeling and finding the pleasant in it was really great. And you know, your story about the broken bowl is so reminiscent. You know, I know that when Cherie's household was, her parents' household was, dissolved, a similar thing happened where her sister-in-law, you know, sent her the, you know, because Cherie had very few things of her mother's. She wanted the cookie jar that was in the kitchen.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And it arrived in pieces. It was broken in transit, you know. So it reminds me of what Ajahn Chah, you know, said about his favorite teacup. It's already broken.
Yes. Yes.
Great talk. Thank you very much, Kathy. So glad.
Thank you. Yeah, Deborah.
Well, first of all, it's really nice to hear an East Coast accent, so thank you for being here.
Thanks.
I'm really loving that. And I guess I'm kind of echoing what was just already said, the story about the bowl and the reminder of that quote that the glass is already broken. And I'm actually thinking about my own body and those bodies of friends of mine in my age group. And even some younger friends. And I think I may have shared this already, but I try to remember to thank my body every day for carrying me this far.
Right.
And I even thank my individual organs.
Uh-huh.
And that is such a wonderful practice for me of kind of remembering and gratitude.
Okay.
But I just really appreciated pretty much everything you said, but man, that story about the broken bowl, I'm gonna, and it looks like you did get it remodeled by a glass blower because of that.
No, this is the shard that's from the broken.
But
right.
You showed us a photograph of a beautiful bowl with.
I happen to have the photograph before. Because it was in my mother's house and the violets she grew were so beautiful. I thought it was so beautiful that I took a photograph.
Well,
so I had it. But I was, no, I didn't even try really to get it reblown, you know.
I also shipped a bunch of my mom's stuff back here from the East Coast when she passed.
Yeah.
I still have those unpacked boxes sitting here waiting for me.
So, right.
But
right.
Some things did arrive broken and, you know,
right.
The glass is already broken. Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay. And I hope the day comes when there's an organ that's not working perfectly that, that you can be with that too, because that's where my spouse is right now, you know? So it's, you know, it really is the same thing that we're talking about. You know, how can we let these things be the way they are?
We have to. There's no
right.
other alternative. Did
right.
you know Eric Kovig?
Yeah, Eric did live in Flagstaff. He's
yes.
since moved to Maine.
Yes, I'm on his Caring Bridge site.
Brian Lesage lives in Flagstaff as the meditation
yes.
teacher. In
I sat with Eric one time when Brian Lesage taught with him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you again. Thank you.
Pleasure. Yeah. Anyone else?
Terry, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you. The one thing that you talked about too just really struck me because, you know, I have to say the first retreat I went on, I think was almost felt magical, you know, and it's just like, it was wonderful. Second retreat, not so much. And it was really what you were saying. Like, you know, it's like, it's like there was too much wanting, too much grasping, and too much putting away. And I really just have to laugh at myself. And I've been on many other ones, but I just recall I was on a retreat about a year or so ago, and there were days that were really lovely. And then I sat and it was amazing. It was like every, excuse me, shitty thing that I've done in my life, starting when I was 4 years old, came up. And it was like, I sit there and go, oh, you know, and I just watched it, and it was, but then I said, this is, the, you know, and this too, but it was actually, by that time, it was okay, and I said, this could be really useful. I said, this is a memory or whatever, but there was no stickiness to it, and there was gratitude for what happened, and then I could go through the things, and I could actually feel whether or not there was still any stickiness to them. Or not. Mm-hmm. And I said, this is really very beneficial. Was it pleasant? Absolutely not. But it was, I think that the one thing I have found through practice, and I wish I could say it happens all the time, it doesn't. The one thing I have found is that it is really possible now to sit with things that are unpleasant. And maybe wait and see if there's going to be a doorway, like you mentioned. Maybe wait and see if it's going to happen, you know, before I switch to something else. And that for me,
the doorway is always what's causing the suffering.
It's to really get
what's causing the suffering.
Yeah. For me, it's am I in contention with what's happening or not?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so yeah. So thank you so much. Brought back That's some great. Fun memories. Yeah.
Great. Okay. Okay. Barbara, I can't tell. Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
I really liked and appreciated the whole thing about resting in the neutral.
Yeah.
Because I've just been on a retreat. It was a wonderful retreat. More of that in a minute. But it was a lot of resting in states of awareness, which were neutral.
Yes,
but the neutrality of it, I didn't get enough. I was grasping, and it was a wonderful retreat. I came off the retreat. Oh, I had my ups and downs, but you know this is a good. And then I hit my email, big fat rejection notice. I'm a writer, and it was like bonk. climbing out of that. Again, seeing the doorway. Well, I'm still looking at the doorway there, but that is very useful to, you know, when you're dealing with where to rest and what to be aware of. So I greatly thank you for that.
Thank you. And yes, the neutral for me is one of my real avenues into emptiness now, the neutral. You know, so for people who are practicing just resting in awareness or the emptiness practice, that's a real, really nice way in.
It's a neutrality. Yeah, that's what it can be. To remember that is great. If you're looking for bliss, then you really do get into grasping.
Right. Right.